Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each, the perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. Later in this episode, we are going to be talking about it. We're going to be talking about it a lot. What is it? It is it. It is...
A real ballsy move to name something it.
And if you could only trademark it.
Yes.
We're also going to be talking about something I have quite experience with, and that's walking a room. And if you don't know what that means, stick around for the third segment. But first off, I guess this is getting to be the Brian and Tim argument segment of the podcast.
I think that was the initial idea when Lewis pitched it, wasn't it?
It's also something I think we avoided, is that we never really wanted to get into an argument. We didn't want it to be a shout fest. But I have noticed that some of our listeners tend to enjoy when you and I argue.
So, yeah, I've noticed that too. We should argue with them about whether or not that's a good idea. Then we could be on the same team.
So today's surefire argument is the rescinding of the DACA order. And it's in the pre-show, which is something we didn't record. Brian mentioned to me sending 800,000 people to Mexico is cruel.
If they've never been there.
Sure.
And they're in as long as they can recollect.
Sure.
Look, I'm not. I'll tell you,
what it reminds me of is the old, and I don't know if anyone uses it anymore in a post Archie Bunker world, but send them back to Africa
was a pretty classic racist thing to say back in the day.
Back in the day, and of course, it's the same kind of thing. It's like. My people have been here longer than you have, Guido. So,
yeah, but I will say I don't. It is a problematic policy in the way it was implemented, and it should be. It was kind of like agree not to enforce almost. It was a policy that was sort of presidential power that, you know, wasn't really codified as a law, which gives it kind of flimsy standing.
But that is for me, it's I'm pretty neutral. I understand the arguments on both sides. I understand the argument on the let them stay. They just want to work here. I understand that argument. I also understand the argument about that it does impact employment. I mean, the reason why we, you know, why the minimum wage is so low is that there are people here were willing to work for a lower minimum wage. I can see both sides of that argument, but for me, so I'm neutral to it on a whole. But for me, it was not constitutional. It was basically. Congress debated the law, debated a bill, said, you know, we're not going to pass this, and then the president signed it anyway, and put it into effect. It was more than just oh, we're not going to go after you. It was like you. It was a procedure that people had to go through to not be sought after. So by
right, you have to apply and you have to reapply for the status every 2 years.
Uh-huh, and pay a registration fee. That has all the earmarks of being a law, which a president cannot do with a pen and his phone, as he once bragged. It's and for that reason alone, it needed to be rescinded. It's Congress's job. It is Congress's job. If they decide now that I think was it 2013? I think is when they were when the Senate passed it. No, I think I'm wrong because it was originally passed in 2012. So it was probably 2010, 2011 that the Senate passed it, sent it over to the House, and the House was going to pass it. The House was ready to pass it until the constituents melted down their switchboard. and at which point they had to decide whether they were going to appease the Chamber of Commerce or their voters. And dang it, the way things work in a democracy is that the voters usually have the final say.
Well, I agree with all the procedural stuff. Here's the thing. I would believe it wasn't rooted in racism if it wasn't being done by the Trump administration, which has shown zero interest in procedural policy and law and order. Like, when does Trump seem to care about the rules and making sure things are done properly and carefully and thoughtfully? That's never been an item on his agenda. So for him to just single DACA out is just, to me, more about him wanting to kick people out of the country than to, you know, make sure things are properly codified.
You know, what race are immigrants?
A lot of different races.
Oh, okay. So I guess it couldn't really be racism.
You can be racist.
It couldn't really be racism, could it?
Well, somebody's doing the raping. Here's the thing. I would believe some of your defenses of Trump if it wasn't for everything that's happened before and everything that's on the record. The notion that Trump is not driven by racial animosity is flatly absurd. I mean, all you have to do is listen to what the guy says. I'm only quoting the guy back from the guy.
What did he ever say that was racist?
When he implied that he constantly scapegoats Mexicans as the problem. Somebody's doing the raping.
Okay, let's stop right there. What race are Mexicans?
Well, they are from Mexico. They would be Hispanic. Are you really trying to have this semantic BS argument?
Yeah, it's not racism. It might be nationalist. It's not racism. Mexicans are all different races. Immigration ban on the people from terrorist nations. What they said, well, he's just racist against Muslims. He doesn't like colored people. It's like, really? What color are Muslims? Are they Muslim colored? It's people.
You're putting fine semantic points on something that is dumb and blunt. I think you're giving You're implying that people who are racist sit down and think really deeply about the subtleties of it. People used to say Italian people weren't white, and now they do. This is a fluid thing. I mean, it is a construct.
Yeah, it's xenophobia.
Why is it when somebody, for instance, and it, look, with Trump, it's a million different things. It's saying both sides. It's him saying there were nice people in the Nazi march. It's him when all the people leave, the corporate people leave him. It's the, who does he attack? He attacks the black guy. It's a million different things. I just Googled. Perfect. I almost forgot the one that literally defines racism, when Trump said that a Mexican judge fundamentally couldn't issue a fair ruling because of his race. So, by the way, then Trump is saying
Did he say that he could not give a fair ruling because of his race? Or did he say that because he was a member of a Mexican nationalist organization?
I'm going to quote, he's a Mexican, Trump told CNN. We're building a wall between there and Mexico. Here in Mexico. The answer is, he is giving us very unfair rulings, rulings that people can't even believe.
Okay, he's Mexican.
He says,
race.
Because
Mexican,
he's a Mexican.
Mexican raced again. He's Mexican
raced. Again, that's Trump saying that.
Yeah, but that's that's nationalism. That's not racism.
You are literally tripping all over yourself to imply that there...
No, you're stumbling over yourself to imply that if somebody's nationalist, they're automatically racist. Which is not necessarily the case. And as far as this goes, and we're getting really close to taking a breath. The reason why I believe Trump is doing this, yes, I don't believe it's a constitutional issue. I believe for Jeff Sessions, yes, I believe it's a constitutional issue. He actually clearly said that in a country, if we do not follow the Constitution and the rule of law, that it will damage the country. And I totally agree with that. Trump, I think, is just using it as a bargaining chip, is that he's holding it over. He's making Congress do something that Congress did not want to do. And that's does he care about the Constitution? No, he cares about power and the art of the deal.
Yeah, I don't even know that he's thought that far ahead. I don't even think he knows what he wants from it, but I think he knows he can mess with people.
All right.
And then. He doesn't care that he puts 800,000 people on edge and makes their lives totally uncertain because of that. He's totally fine with that.
And speaking of on edge, we are right on the edge of the next segment.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, we're going to talk about the scariest thing to any comedy to most comedy club owners anyway, which is walking the room. If you don't know what that is, you shall find out in the next segment.
Sounds kind of like a dance or a song from the 50s.
Oh yeah, walk in the room. Yep. It sounds like a pleasant thing, right? That's the best part. Hello, walk. You go for a little walk. It does strike fear into the heart of many a timid purveyor of yuck-yucks and beer.
Look at such a good room. Does he want to go for a walk? Yes, he does.
I actually didn't walk a room one time, even though I said they were dumb, and shook my keys at them, saying, maybe this will entertain you. Literally shook my keys at people.
However, we're chewing up material that we might need to stretch for a whole 10 minutes.
Oh, I feel confident we can get 10 minutes out of that. But yes, comedy club owners do fear that. What are you afraid of? That's kind of what I'm curious about. I know we're both fans of Halloween for a variety of reasons. It's a great holiday. But part of the reason I like Halloween is I love scary stuff. I like being scared. My wife does not like being scared. Some people don't enjoy it. And I was thinking about this. It's, your nerves are all crisscrossed around and they have weird synapses. So for some people, I think the fight or flight and the pleasure nerve are kind of close together, you know? So when one is sparked, the other one tingles. For some people who don't have that cross, it's baffling to them, right? Like, why would you want to be scared?
I don't know if it's necessarily the cross. I think it's the relief. It's the joke is, why are you hitting yourself in the head with a hammer? Because it feels wonderful when I stop.
Yes, right.
And that's the example that everyone brings up is why do you eat hot peppers? Is you eat hot peppers and you feel that you're going to be poisoned. And when it wears off, you feel wonderful. And people get the same sort of thrill from exercising and running, I prefer peppers. but I think that's possibly... It's the roller coaster thing. You get to the top. It's, oh my gosh, you crash down. And then all of a sudden, oh, I'm falling and nothing's really happening. How delightful.
Some people don't get the attendant fun feeling after the bad feeling,
The adrenaline, once the bad feeling's over, it's just pure adrenaline. And that's what I think it is that for you.
Yes, right, exactly. Which is interesting because I can understand it in reverse via gambling because when I don't enjoy the risk and then when I win, I don't get the, ooh, I won. I'm just like, oh, huh. I didn't think that was going to happen. That's probably not going to happen again. I can't enjoy it. But I do enjoy being scared. And as a way big fan going back, my favorite thing was Stephen King for favorite thing to read. I got in trouble with my mother when I checked Cujo out from the library when I was like 6 or 7 and I hid it under my bed and I was reading it at night because I knew it was not going to fly.
Why did you get in trouble? Was there things in that book that a 6 or 7-year-old should not read or know about yet? Or did she just not want you crawling into bed with her in the middle of the night because you were scared?
No, I was never the. I'm sure I did a little bit, and I was really little, but no, it was the swearing and the whatever. Okay. Adult subject matter. I was sort of not allowed to watch rated R movies, basically until my parents got divorced and all the walls came tumbling down. But sure. but I love Stephen King and I just kept trying to sneak it and whatever and until eventually my mother just gave up and all right, fine, at least you're reading books. I'll take it. So my favorite of Stephen King's books is It. And I enjoy the TV movie version of it, but it has its obvious constraints. And I'm not one of those people who's always really eager to see a book or something that I like turned into a movie. I usually don't care. But I love that so much that I am very excited to see this sort of R-rated, you know, modern special effects, Stranger Things-esque take on it. And so I'm very excited about that. And it occurred to me, do you have a favorite scary movie or book or thing, you know, like a weapon of choice for that?
I'm reminded of a scene from The Munsters. You're familiar with the show? Yes.
Oh, I'm familiar with The Munsters. Yeah, Fred Gwynne.
Okay.
Grandpa Lewis.
I'm just making sure.
Yeah.
And they're all coming home. They're all coming home from a movie, and they're just terribly disappointed. They're like, well, that was a waste of money. And then Lily goes, it was fake blood. Grandpa spotted that in the second scene.
I love The Munsters. Of course, Charles Adams did The Addams Family.
Right. Sure.
Who were The Munsters was just a Hanna-Barbera concert? How did those come about? I don't know anything about the history of The Munsters.
I think back then, I think espionage between the networks was very rampant. Is Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie debuted on opposite networks about the same time.
Right.
Batman and the Green Hornet, even though they were done by the same person, different networks. So what was happening right in that period is that if somebody came up with a concept that the other network thought was going to be great, they'd come up with a knockoff. And
So The Munsters basically is, what if The Addams Family, but we'll just put some famous monsters in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I figured it felt second.
Yeah. Well, the Addams Family goes back to the New York cartoon.
Right. And the Charles Addams,
And I mean, it's truly twisted, whereas the Munsters was just, get it? We're monsters.
Yeah.
It had its charm. It's don't get me wrong. It's
Sure. I love. Didn't they have the car with the rain cloud that followed over everywhere?
Could be. Yeah. what cracked me up was Marilyn was a beautiful, beautiful girl that they all felt so sorry for.
that's a very funny running gag.
But that's kind of where I am. Is that I can't watch a movie and be scared. I can be startled.
Sure.
You know? And that's. Most of the movies for me, it seems like that's all it is combination startle and gross out, and there's no scare there.
Ooh, but like Paranormal Activity or now here's the other question: like when I watch a movie, I can like put it this way: I can very easily not be scared by a movie, right? I'm of the opinion that you have to kind of let yourself be scared. So for me, it's very ideally being in a movie theater. If you're at home, you got to turn all the lights out. You gotta focus completely. You can't get up. You can't break the spell. You have to let yourself fall into it. You know, it's a kind of willed hypnosis in a way. But if I let myself fall into it, I can definitely be scared. And then of course, as soon as the credits roll, I'm walking home. I'm like, oh well, I'm not checking under my back in my back seat when I get into the car. Yeah.
A friend of mine said something once, and we were talking about magic, and he said, "I love magic. I want it to be real. I just enjoy really watching really good magic." And I realized that's a flaw in my personality because I can't enjoy magic. Because for me, it's, okay, how did he do that one? And that's the obsession is, I want to figure out how that was done so much that if I can't, I don't say, wow, that was a great illusion. I go, that jerk fooled me. How the heck did And I'll go home obsessing about how the heck did they get away with. And then usually I'll concoct some weird Rube Goldberg sort of device that was far beyond what it really took to create the illusion.
Sure. Oh, no, I just had the ball in my left hand to start. Like, oh, that was it.
It's really funny. I don't know. I forget the name of the movie, but it was about magicians and they did the collapsing pigeon cage. Mm-hmm. Where it was like a pigeon in a cage, and then all of a sudden it disappeared, and they had to dump out the dead pigeon every time.
Yeah, what is? I know exactly what you're talking about. Is it Arrested Development? Maybe.
No. It was an actual movie. It was.
I think it was
the Christopher Nolan magic movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was The Prestige. I definitely remember that. I think sometimes that is the grim answer. It's just like, boy, I can't imagine how the doves would survive that. And you're like, yeah, I can't imagine how the doves would survive that. But interesting. Well, I wish that you could enjoy it, because I do think the sensation of being scared is quite fun. So I'll probably
watch it. Mrs. Slagle. Mrs. Slagle loves Stephen King. She's a big Stephen King fan.
Oh, nice. Way back. So okay.
I probably will end up watching it. But,
okay.
Maybe I'll get scared. Maybe I'll try to put myself into that self hypnosis.
Sure. The old Brian Miller self-delusion trick works every time.
We'll spoken like a true segment. Liberal.
We'll see you on the next segment for Walking Them.
The final segment of the Rule of Three. I've been having an argument online with a comic, and it's an ongoing argument. And basically, what has happened is that he has decided that he is going to be the anti-Trump comedian. Nothing like a finding a niche that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a long line for that a job application, I think.
Already in the industry. Basically, he's been getting up on stage and not really making fun of Donald Trump, because it's hard to make fun of Donald Trump. The truth is, it's nearly impossible to say anything funnier than the stuff Trump does himself.
It's the classic. It's the reason Mystery Science Theater doesn't riff on comedies.
Right.
It's already ridiculous. It's hard to say ridiculous things about a ridiculous thing. The ridiculous thing just sort of is.
Right.
It is its own. It makes its own gravy, as the dog food commercials say.
Exactly. Anytime there is a vein to be mined, it already is. So what a lot of the comics have been doing is they've been going after Trump supporters. It's pretty much the standard stuff. It's great speech, but I liked it in the original German. You know, stuff like that. You're just a bunch of Nazis. You're a bunch of racists. You're stupid. You're ignorant. You don't know as much as I do about the world events. So that, of course, you support them. And when you do that, there's a really good chance when you're talking of, even though it's his support seems minuscule at this point, and compared to previous presidents, it is low. It is solid support, and it's roughly a little bit more than one in three Americans. So
that's about the number, I think, of the base, as they say.
Right, and if you get up there and say that anyone who supports this guy is a moron. With no joke, mind you, no joke whatsoever, you're going to get a bunch of people saying, well, we don't need to hear this. And they will get up and they will leave the room. And if enough of a people do that, it is what we in the industry call walking the room. This comic is kind of proud of it. And I've been trying to explain to him this particular comic. I don't think I singled it out before. I just said that many comics, but yeah, sure. There's one comic.
The one you're having the online argument with.
Yeah, I'm having an online ongoing argument. It's like, well, that's not a good thing.
But you of course see the irony coming from who it's coming from.
I don't think he realizes that, actually. I don't think he realizes. I'll throw in here that I have the record at Acme Comedy Company in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have the standing record for walking a room. 297 people in the room when I started, 27 when I was done.
That's statistically, that's basically everyone.
No, it is exactly 90%, I believe.
Oh, okay. 90%. Yeah. I guess 297. Yeah, 29. Yeah.
I walked 90% of the room one night, which is not. I guess I'm proud of it, only for the reason.
Oh, you're proud
that,
of it. I've heard you brag about it.
Yeah, but it's also that what I'm most proud about was getting booked back.
Well, that's fair. Well, did we just talk about what's the roller coaster, the fear of death, and then the sweet release?
But I will say is that in my younger years, I was in the same position. It's that for me was there was a sense of victory when you know it's me against you know these people and these people who paid $25 each to see you.
Sure. Well, I mean,
what sense of victory is that? That's not victory. That's just being a jerk.
I do agree, and I've never been a I don't like to. I think it's a balance, right? Like I don't like to choir preach. I think it's super boring to go into a room where you know everyone agrees with you and say the thing that you know they're going to applaud for. You know,
right.
Whatever. You know,
give it up for the troops. How about a hand for the troops?
Yeah, and there's versions of that. It only depends on what room you're in. There's every political version of that, or there's going to the Star Trek convention and saying, you know, well, I'll tell you, Picard sure is a lot better than that Han Solo. You know, like, I mean, there's a version of that or for everything, right? And I'm utterly disinterested in that. But I also have never been one to like actively court disdain. To me. Just me personally, the fun and the kind of the dance of comedy was I want people to be on my side and be interested in what I'm saying. And then I want to see absolutely how far I can push that and how many weird different ideas I can introduce in that and still have them, you know, they don't have to agree with me, but still enjoying what I'm doing.
Exactly.
And then at the end, I'll make sure I do something that we all enjoy. And hopefully it was challenging sounds like a snooty way of saying it, but you know, hopefully you laughed at some stuff you wouldn't have thought you would have laughed at. But then there was some stuff that everybody liked and they go home. That's my balance, pH balance for comedy.
Yeah, no, it's now that I'm older, I realize that, that is where the art is that you want the audience, to quote, The Simpsons, you want the audience to go, hey.
yeah, absolutely. Because that's it is like you're... the entertainment part of it is you're supposed to make these folks in a nightclub have a good time. You know, comedy is an art, but it's also a craft and it's also just entertainment. I think what bugs me is when people, you know, when the road hack denies the art part of it or when the alt hack denies the entertainment part of it.
Yeah, it's Lenny Bruce did a disservice. The idolization of Lenny Bruce did a tremendous disservice for comedy, and there are a few heirs in his stead. I mean, since Lenny Bruce that I could name, but he was the original. He was the original that decided to stop being funny, and since then he's sort of become the martyr of comedy that those want to follow. You know, it's like, you know, when they stuck Saint Peter on the cross and turned it upside down and set it on fire, is millions of people around the world aspired to die the same way. I think that's kind of what happened with a lot of comics is that and you're right, the craft and the art and all those other things and the simple basis of the fact that it's just entertainment, that's really That's really all it is. You know, if you can say something poignant that lasts into, you know, into a generation or two after you're gone, I mean, that's a heck of something, you know, a hell of a thing to aspire to. But, you know, first, make them laugh.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so here's my theory on this, that I understand the psychology a little bit, is that in a way, walking a room is proving to yourself and to everyone else that you're sticking to your principles. Because if you're a comedian, the thing you want most is audience approval. And so then by spurning that approval in the name of your belief, whatever that belief is, you're kind of making a public devotion to your principles.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying I think that's the psychology of it.
Right, right. It's the comic that got offered the television deal and ripped up the check and threw it in the NBC president's face. Which
yeah.
I don't think has ever happened.
No, but no.
But that's you're exactly right. It's showing that you are a better person than just simple material pleasure. And the truth is we'd all sell out. We just haven't been offered the proper price.
Yeah, well, I say I'm not that cynical. I don't think that's true. I think it's a continuum. I don't like the binary conception of sellout, because that's what leads people to then snootily say anytime you open with an appearance joke to get the audience on your side, oh, he's just a hack. And you're like, or maybe I'm goofing up top to get them on my side because I want to throw some crazy ideas at him in the middle.
Oh,
you know?
No, I understand. I'm not
so
saying
that's, –
So
that's
not,
the thing I worry
I'm
about.
Not,
but
I'm,
I,
not,
so,
I'm not saying that. No. I'm saying that that everybody would sell out if the price was right. That's all. I'm not saying
I mean,
that we all don't –
would I sell out for $2 billion? Well, it depends on what sell out would mean. Would I you know, pledge my support to a genuinely
Donald
evil
Trump.
Entity? For No, I wouldn't. There's no amount of money that would get me to pledge my fealty to Donald Trump.
okay.
But now would I not curse in a set for extra money? Yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah,
so
that would actually be a fun prank, is to dress someone up like a television executive with a big case of money and three juggling balls.
If you can learn this, you're in.
You learn this, you get this.
Oh my God, there'd be people juggling. You wouldn't. There'd be hands reaching in front of you to grab the balls. People would shove you to the ground and trample over you to get to those balls first. There's definitely always a line of those guys standing behind you for sure.
And I think that's all for today. It's timslagle.com, all the episodes there. Check out my website anyway. I'm doing some minor tweaks onto that before and after this. Also, at Tim Slagle on Twitter, at Tim Slagle on Facebook. And if you like the show, let us know. If you don't like the show, let us know. If there's something you like, let us just comment.
Yeah,
dang it.
Twitter and Facebook and email is all nice, but if you want to leave any review and comments on the page would be helpful.
And of course, also real Brian Miller.
Oh, yeah, on Twitter at brianmillercomedy.com. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Bye.